Okay, hi friends, on we go. for those who are busy preparing and transcribing all these things, I was filled with things I had to do yesterday, and therefore was not able to do any of these programs, I'm sure much to their relief, as they have been piling up. I have to always work at a time when I can, and my wife kept me very busy yesterday, so it was not a time that I could. Anyway, moving on. We're on number 35. Yes, 35. So we've been referring to the development of man from the quite early stages of tamasic response. There have been a number of these stages, six of them, all the way from the very beginning until real discipleship work. And now we're working on further developments. We have, therefore, says the Tibetan, page 100 and, 148, I judge, but goodness, is it possible? Yeah, because we're nearing the end of this this particular section on 153. Let's see if we can do it in this program. I'm not at all sure that we can, but let's see if we can. We have therefore the following stages dealt with in Rule 4 and pointed out with lucidity, yet with that parsimony of phrase which distinguishes all occult and symbolic writings. As I said, there I err. Excuse me. Okay, now, stage one. One, the integration of the form as the result of the activity of the soul through the use, oh, goodness. Right. Well, maybe I'm repeating here, but let's just see. Through the use of sound, light, and vibration, the development of the response apparatus for use in the phenomenal world. We are, you know, back in the early days here. The eventual turning away from the phenomenal world as the result of the of use and consequent satiety, and the gradual use of the subtler response apparatus, which exists within every one of us and will gradually be developed as the process of initiation continues. The number four, the response apparatus of the soul, mind, etheric body, and brain, and here he does put the etheric body as an intermediary, as indeed it is, because the etheric brain is very important, brain and nervous system together, which are the physical physical instruments, etheric body, the intermediary between the mind and the physical instrument, physical etheric instrument. No, physical instrument, sorry. But although etheric is physical, all right, from the technical point of view, and then the mind comes, and then the soul on the higher mental plane. The response apparatus, here we are given, mind, etheric body, brain, and nervous system, is reoriented, and the man becomes aware of the kingdom of the soul, another kingdom in nature, and we know what it is, the fifth, the kingdom of nature. And the turning away, finally, from the kingdom of the world to the kingdom of the soul becomes an esoteric habit. And in this thought lies hid the secret of esoteric psychology. We are interested in esoteric psychology. We are interested in the true psyche, which is on the higher mental plane, or at least it's the state of consciousness that we find on the higher mental plane and that we frequently call the soul. The man is stabilized in the spiritual life. Naught can now hinder. And this stabilization occurs securely at the third initiation. All right. So it basically, he has repeated here what he gave us earlier in a more expanded version in relationship to the various stages of undeveloped man, developing man, advanced man, the aspirant and the disciple, and of course, onto the path of true initiation. All right, now we come to something, the last section in chapter 4 here. It's called The Science of the Breath. It's indispensable and incompletely given for reasons of caution. So now we come to the significant words in Rule 4, the man breathes deeply. Okay, he's going to drive that thought form from him. Let's see, now just in order to be clear, let's go to a treatise on white magic and just those early pages. Right here where the rules are listed, the man breathes deeply, he concentrates his forces and drives the thought form from him. The man breathes deeply. This is a phrase covering many aspects of rhythmic living. We might call it, living under the influence of the guna, my ofs or foes, under the influence of the guna sattva. It is the magical formula for the science of pranayama. I suppose most of us, I certainly include myself, are involved in rajasic living, rushing here and there, trying to get things done, but there comes the time when sattva will take over. Okay. It covers the art of the creative life, and through the process of the inhalation, retention, exhalation, and fixation, if we can call them that. It's basically the process is the inhalation, higher interlude, exhalation, and lower interlude. And, there is a retention of the breath during some conceptual and receptive work in the higher interlude, and there is a retention of the breath or a refusal to take the next inhalation until there is the fixation of that which has been received in the fixation in the lower worlds of that which has been received. So this creative life, this pranayama, it sweeps a man into tune with the pulsating life of God himself. And through detachment and reorientation. To serve the plan, in a way, I'll say this, to serve the plan is to breathe with the divine plan. Okay. And this, of course, is a mode of impersonal living because the promptings of the astral body or the personality, they are not followed. But what is followed is correct timing in terms of the requirement to apply the necessary energy correctly at the right time. It is notably interesting as a demonstration of the succinctness and inclusiveness of phrases such as in Rule 4. Maybe having the first ray in the mind helps somewhat. With this succinctness, perhaps. The art of breathing is dealt with in three phases, and these I commend to each of you for the most careful consideration. Well, you know, we always receive some information about the art of breathing. Let's put it like this. In some of the exercises that Master DK gives, this art of breathing is utilized. There are some rhythms that are given, but basically it's the thought during the process which is emphasized. But the deeper secrets connected with it are not yet given out in instructions intended for the general public, or which are likely to reach the general public. So the first is the aspect of inhalation. The man breathes deeply. From the very depths of his being, he draws the breath. Well, you know, he can touch subtle levels in this indrawing. It's not just a question of getting oxygen. Okay, DRAW, and this in drawing. He draws the breath. In the process of phenomenal living, he draws the very breath of life from the soul. We might say via the sutratma, which sustains him with the essence of livingness. He remains in incarnation. This is the first stage. In the process, now, this is when he is entering the phenomenal life. But later, in the process of detaching himself from phenomenal living, he draws from the depths of his being and experiences the life as it may be rendered again back to the source from whence it came. So this is on the path of principle of refusal, PTOR. How about that? PTHOR. How about that? Let's see. PTH. Okay, 1, 2, 3. And PTH. PTHOR. And we're going to call this the path of return. There is the path of outgoing and the path of return. One is involutionary and the final one is evolutionary. Okay. PTHOR. On the path of return. So it's rendered back to its source from whence it came, and his life returns unto the source of life. Eventually, his life returns unto the source of life, which is the monad. Of course, the monad is sustained by still higher agencies, but at the very heart of the monad is the beingness which can never die and which was never born. So we draw that which sustains us in the phenomenal world, and we draw the means by which we return to the non-phenomenal world. Maybe we can call it the noumenal world. In the occult life of the disciple, as he develops a new and subtler use of his response apparatus, he practices the science of the breath and discovers that through deep breathing, including the three stages of the deep, middle, and top breath, and this sounds somewhat anatomical, he can bring into activity in the world of esoteric experiences his vital body with its four centers. We might say one of the major purposes of breathing exercises is to bring the vital body into activity in certain ways. Thus, the three aspects of the deep breathing cover the entire soul experience. Well, I suppose from the lower to the higher possibilities, and the relationship to the three types of breath touched upon above can be worked out by the interested student. I suppose we could say esoteric experience. Okay, that at the moment, at the present time, when we are aspiring and practicing discipleship, we are concerned primarily with the top breath, as it is called. The top, well, that's not going to do. The top breath, and assuming that it represents the activation of the higher centers. Okay. Practicing. Right. All right. So you know, this will be an interesting section, not only for what we are told, but for what we are not told. All right. Now, I always try to memorize this word. Yes, it's this began in 148. All right. Next, we read, he concentrates his forces. So the man breathes deeply, and then he concentrates his forces. And here we have the stage indicated, which might be called the retention of the breath at the top of the higher interlude. It is the holding of all the forces of the life steadily in the place of silence, you know, presumably within the range of the soul, within the vicinity of the of soul life. And when this can be done with ease and with forgetfulness of process through familiarity of experience, then the man can see and hear and know in a realm other than the phenomenal world. We want this to open up to us, right? So that the phenomena, or the noumena, or the energy occurrences, and the types of knowledge which pertain to the higher mental plane and beyond can be registered by us. In the higher sense, this is the stage of contemplation, the lull between two activities, as it has been so aptly called, and even samadhi has been considered to be an aspect of contemplation. So even the high state of realization and consciousness called samadhi has been considered to be an aspect of contemplation. The soul, the breath, the life has withdrawn out of the three worlds and in the secret place of the Most High. Now, this is a relative Most High. We are not speaking of Sanat Kumara, but of a high center within the man's energy system. So this soul, this breath, this life has been withdrawn and is at rest and at peace contemplating the beatific vision. Is it drawn to the astral plane? Is it drawn into the triad? You know, via the Antikarana, we ask, via the Antikarana, is the breath, the life, the soul drawn into the realm of the spiritual triad and beyond the higher mental plane? I suppose at a certain point it must be. And if we're contemplating samadhi, really, then this samadhi relates to the realization of pure being and oneness, and it pertains very much to the monad per se. So there are all these different stages of contemplation, and in the East, there are discriminations made between the various strata of the contemplative process, even between, well, the various samadhis, the various types of realization. In the life of the active disciple, it produces those interludes which every disciple knows when, through detachment and the capacity to withdraw, he is held by nothing in the world of form. Okay, well, through a realization. The witness of form, but not held by desire, which is the great holding, ensnaring factor in the world of form. As he is but wrestling towards perfection and has not yet attained, these interludes of silence, withdrawingness, and of detachment are frequently difficult and dark. In other words, we have to go into the dark before the greater light breaks forth. We enter the dark before the greater light breaks forth. All is silence, and he stands appalled by the unknown and by the apparent empty stillness in which he finds himself. You know, DK is speaking from experience, obviously. This is called, in advanced cases, the dark night of the soul. I think these dark nights, and they are also sequential and progressive, these dark nights do not really begin until the area of the fourth initiation. And the initiate Jesus at, second initiation, and the initiate Jesus at the fourth initiation was passing through a higher form of dark night in which he realized the painful condition of humanity. Okay, anyway, it's the moment before dawn, the hour before the light streams forth, and this is something we have to be aware of, you know, the closer the breaking of dawn, the apparently darker the preceding darkness. Well, this is something that we've either gone through somewhat in anticipation of these higher states, or that we will be passing through. He concentrates his forces on the higher interlude, and the disciple is wrestling and has not achieved that altitude from which the necessary form of concentration can occur and the higher stages of contemplation can occur. In the science of pranayama, it is the moment following upon inhalation wherein all the forces of the body have, through the medium of the breath, been carried upward in to the head and concentrated there prior to the stage of breathing forth. Well, the head is heaven here. The head is the place where the energies must be raised, to which the energies must be raised. And it is a moment of concentration of indrawn forces, a moment of the concentration of indrawn forces. This moment of retention, when properly carried forward, produces an interlude of intense concentration, and it is in this moment that the aspirant must seize opportunity, and herein lies a hint. So a great alertness and readiness must characterize the process, or the attitude of the breathing deliberately, breathing aspirant or disciple. Really, by this time, the person is a disciple. The word aspirant can take us all the way, well, it can take us beyond the third initiation. We all aspire to something, even the great planetary logoi and solar logoi aspire and are aspirants to a certain extent with respect to a certain objective, and disciples in other ways. Then comes the process of exhalation. We read in Rule 4, he drives the thought form from him. So, you know, this moment of concentration is a moment of receptivity and the coherence of that which has been received. This is ever the result of the final stage of the science of the breath, the form vitalized by the one who breathes in correct rhythm is sent forth to do its work and fulfill its mission. So study this idea with care, for it holds the secret of creative work. Now, you know, it makes you think, for how long must we retain the breath in the higher interlude? What degree of clarity of impression is needed in the higher interlude? But certainly, you know, the soul, or whatever the higher source may be to which we are making application, is fully capable of impressing upon the upraised consciousness that which must be materialized. So this exhalation is a breathing out of that which has been impressed, a vital breathing out. But there is another stage. It's called the lower interlude. I wonder if you'll deal with that here. In the experience of the soul, the form for manifestation in the three worlds is created by intense manifestation, which is ever the paralleling activity of breathing. Maybe as we continue to breathe, the form gets clearer and clearer. As we continue to breathe, the form, which has been received in the higher interlude, becomes clearer and clearer. Now, with respect to the creating of a man, which is the instrument of the soul, we might say man, or the human being, really. The human being is created by the intense meditation of the soul. The soul knows, having contemplated the previous life or lives and knowing somewhat the tendency of the future, has to arrange the energy factors accordingly, and also, I suppose, the environment into which the soul in incarnation will be breathed. Now, you know, there has to be some wisdom in this, and so often it is that people feel they've been, breathed into the wrong environment, manifested in the wrong environment, but there are probably karmic factors which make this, make it in fact correct and the right environment. Then by an act of will resulting in a breathing forth, so, you know, let's just say we breathe forth willfully, and the soul breathes forth willfully. One L or two L's, depends on whether it's English or American English, and I seem to be living in both worlds here. Then by an act of will resulting in a breathing forth, engendered or arrived at dynamically in the interlude of contemplation or retention of the breath, the creative form is sent into the phenomenal world to serve as a channel of experience, a medium of expression, and a response apparatus in the three worlds of human living. And that's where we are now. We might say, as souls in incarnation. Aha. So I don't have the plural, right? Okay, S-I-I-S. And we'll call this souls in incarnation. I'm no longer telling you why I'm doing this, you know it. As souls in incarnation, we are apparently here now and are acting as an instrument of, reception, but also of action for our higher self. Okay. Which we also are, even more so. All right. In the life of the disciple, which we also are. In the life of the disciple, through meditation and discipline, he learns to reach high moments of interlude where whenever he concentrates his forces on the plane of soul life. And then again, by an act of his will, he breathes forth his spiritual purposes, plans, and life into the world of experience. Now, this probably should be undertaken, very carefully, deliberately. To be undertaken carefully and deliberately, and not simply allow the process to end with elevation and impression. We can't let go of the process once we've been impressed on high. We have to deliberately and in a focused manner breathe it forth into the realm of phenomenal activity so it will be effective and focused. The thought form that he has constructed as to the part he has to play and the concentration of energy which he has succeeded in bringing about become effective. And sometimes he uses the word force, sometimes energy, and sometimes these two are much discriminated, but in this particular case, it doesn't seem that it's so discriminated unless we say that he has received the impression of an energy which the soul is. But of course, the breathing forth, a directed breathing forth, involves the concept of force. So the thought form that he has constructed as to the part he has to play and the concentration of energy which he has succeeded in bringing about become effective, they make an impact, right? Yes. I'll just put that down, it's obvious, but they make an impact and change the environment and his life in that environment. The energy needed for the next step is breathed forth by the soul and passes down into the vital body, thus galvanizing the physical instrument with the needed constructive activity. So what will we say, when breathing in this way, when breathing thoughtfully in this way, target the vital body. That aspect of the plan which he has appreciated in contemplation and that part of the general purpose of the hierarchy in which his soul feels called upon to cooperate is breathed forth simultaneously. Okay, so the aspect of the plan which he has understood, appreciated in the contemplative interlude, and that part of the general purpose of hierarchy in which his soul feels called upon to cooperate. I mean, solar angel, angel of the presence, also has its work to be done, is breathed forth simultaneously via the mind into the brain, should we say, into the etheric brain first, and thus he drives the thought form from him, from himself on the higher contemplative interludes, and eventually into the environment. Right. Well, it's all a very controllable process, and one that has to be clear to us as we think about being effective in the world as a disciple representing the divine plan on in cooperation with humanity and on behalf, in cooperation with the hierarchy and on behalf of humanity. Finally, in the science of pranayama, this stage covers that exhaling breath when carried forward with thought and conscious purpose behind it, serving to vitalize the centers and fill each of them with dynamic life. So this stage, it's the stage of exhalation, covers that exhaling breath which, when carried forward with thought, now it's not a mindless exhalation, and conscious purpose behind it, serves to vitalize the centers and fill them with dynamic life. We have touched a higher level of energy, which is energizing to the etheric centers. Thus, in this science of breathing deeply, we have the whole process of creative work and of the evolutionary unfoldment of God in nature. Now, we should not forget the retention of the breath once the exhalation has occurred. Maybe he'll deal with it. What about the retention of the breath once the exhalation has occurred? Because there's a kind of a fixation within the lower worlds, and a stabilization of the descending vibration and the strengthening of its impact. So whether this is a human being or a magician with his own smaller creative processes, whether it's the soul creating a human being, whether it's a planetary logos creating a planet or a solar logos, a solar system, there are strong analogies between all of these stratified phases of the same process. It is the process whereby the life, the one existence, has brought the phenomenal world into being. And Rule 4 is a digest of the creation. Okay. The man breathes deeply. He concentrates his forces. And drives the thought form from him. It is equally a formula under which the individual soul creates its centers of force for the manifestation in the three worlds of human experience. So the organization of the etheric body into its vortices or centers occurs in this way, through the same process. The right use of the life breath, notice, I mean, you know, you can breathe without sounding. Note that, of course. One can breathe without sounding. But of course, if one does sound, then a special phase of the creative process is engaged in. So the right use of the occult breath is the whole art in which the aspirant, the disciple, and the initiate work, bearing in mind, however, that the science of the physical breath is the least important aspect and follows sequentially upon the right use of energy, which is the word we apply to the divine breath of life. So here is another one of these great definitions of energy. Defining energy as the, quote, divine breath or life. And, you know, here one wants to really be reminded of that. Scattered throughout the teachings are important definitions which tell a story and fill in the information that is missing. So this is something that we all have to work at, be we an aspirant, a disciple, or an initiate in the conventional sense. And remember that it's not all about the external breathing, okay, success. Since man tends to materialize his considerations, it is good to be reminded that the physical breath is the least important aspect in the process. Right, and we have to work. We have to work with greater subtlety. All right. And energy here is defined as the divine, the right use of energy. That's the word that we use for the divine breath of life. The divine breath of life. Finally, in the mental life of the disciple, and in the great work of learning to be a conscious creator in mental matter and so produce results in the phenomenal world, this fourth rule holds the instructions upon which the work is based. It embodies the science of our entire magical work. Now remember also, this is only rule four, and we are still engaged in rules for the mental plane, or rules of magic for the mental plane. So, and all of us are trying to be white magicians in some way or another, because we want to help to bring the divine plan into existence. So we're learning the great work of becoming a conscious creator in mental matter and changing relationships in the, what I call the mosaic world, so that they reflect the archetypal world. Changing conditions, which are often out of correct relationship, into right archetypal relationship. Therefore, this rule warrants the closest consideration and study. Rightly understood and rightly studied, it would lead each aspirant out of the phenomenal world into the kingdom of the soul. Can we do that? Do we have enough information? Can we take what we have learned here and apply it to our creative process? Its instructions, if carried out, would lead the soul back again into the phenomenal world as the creating force in soul magic, which is white magic, and as the manipulator and dominating factor of and through the medium of the form. So, let's just say a very important white magical rule. Now, let's see. No, that's not it. Sorry. Okay. I have to press the right thing. White magical, MGL. All right. MG. White magical rule. All right, a very important white magical rule. And we must practice outwardly and inwardly when attempting to make a difference in the phenomenal world. Phenomenal world. All right. Well, close study will be required. Close study will be required. In the training of the Occidental student, blind, unquestioning obedience is never asked. Such a student must use the well-cultivated mind, which has come with the Aryan race of consciousness. Suggestions are made as to the method and as to a technique which has proved effective for thousands of years and with many disciples. Some rules as to breathing, as to helpful process, and as to practical living on the physical plane will be imparted, but in the training of the new type of disciple during the coming age, it is the will of the watching gurus and rishis that they be left freer than has heretofore been the case. So much then rests upon our own wise use of the suggestions and hints that have been imparted. Right. This may mean a slightly slower development at the beginning, but will result, it is hoped, in a more rapid unfoldment during the later stages upon the path of initiation. The initiate will know with greater confidence what he is doing. So we have to live through this apparent slowness at first. Therefore, students are urged to go forward during their period of training with courage and with joy, knowing that they are members of a band of disciples, you know, whether or not we detect this, we know them in person. Sometimes one does, and recognizes people with whom one has worked before, or are people with whom one is intended to work, knowing that they are not alone, but that the strength of the band is theirs. One of my brothers in this work gave me a war movie. I like those, you know, called The Band of Brothers. And we are in a war of a kind for the expression of the right kind of human values which are congruent with the divine plan. So there's the externalization of war and there's the internalization of war. Mars is involved maybe in both. With Aries, sometimes it tends to be the externalization of war until Mercury takes over. And with Scorpio, certainly the battle rages within. Not that it doesn't rage without, but certainly the internal war is very Scorpionic. So knowing that they are members of a band of disciples, knowing that they are not alone, but that the strength of the band is theirs. The knowledge of the band is theirs too as they develop the capacity to apprehend it. And we might say through telepathy and the right kind of conversation within the strict of occult silence. And knowing also that the love and wisdom and understanding of the watching elder brothers are back of every aspiring son of God, even though apparently and wisely he is left to wrestle through to the light and the strength of his own omnipotent soul. What a great sentence. Great idea. The love and wisdom is there, even though he is left to wrestle through into the light in the strength of his own omnipotent soul. I want to point out something about that term omnipotent soul, you know? Now, let's just say this. Consciousness on the higher mental plane is not omnipotent, nor is the will which belongs to that level omnipotent. So the soul is something much greater than is found on the higher mental plane. Even monad has soul. Soul is consciousness, and from a certain respect, from a certain point of view, the monad, with its will and consciousness, can be considered man's highest soul, until he transcends even that limitation, while always retaining the core of spirit as being which he is. Okay, I hope that makes sense. Well, basically, have I been racing? We did reach Rule 5. And so we can say that, you know, this is the end, of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 35. And that was page, rule 4, 3.7. I do hope that is correct. And as usual, I'm sorry, I must go back. Will I ever get it all together so I don't have to go back? Up is 4.7. Good thing, too. All right. That's like an obvious mistake, isn't it? So sometimes there are disadvantages to having Neptune in the third house. Advantages and disadvantages. Rule 4.7, and that's the end there. And it has been page 148 to, I suppose, 153. Looks like then a page is skipped before we get into Rule 5 to 153. And the next time we begin, and I hope it's soon, beginning of A Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 36, Rule 5.1, page 155, it looks like, with maybe a blank page somewhere in there. Well, the clarity with which he presents has to be absorbed. The faith and joy of knowing that the complete system will be ours before long and when we are ready, and knowing that somehow the objective of gaining mental clarity about the whole process, enough clarity by means of which we can begin some experimentation in our attempts to work with the divine plan. The man breathes deeply, he concentrates his forces, and drives the thought form from him. And in this particular case, it is definitely the man, the magician, the one becoming soul conscious who does the driving. We don't have to depend, as we would if we were to be incarnating, on the soul to do this, although the degree to which the awakening inner man cooperates with the soul, well, that has to be explored. After all, you know, the newly made member of the Fourth Kingdom has not so much knowledge or wisdom, even in the higher mental plane, and the presence of the angel of the presence, solar angel, is responsible for just about all the work. But, you know, the human being is like an apprentice, and gradually returning to the higher mental plane must see and participate in how the angel of the presence, solar angel, is working. And you begin to wonder, is there a point at which whatever we are on the higher mental plane can begin to cooperate with the creation of the new vehicles and the setting up of the next incarnation? Can we be somewhat consciously alert of what it means to set up an impending incarnation? Of course, the knowledge of the solar angel, angel of the presence, is necessary because that being can see behind and see ahead. But is there a time when we, as our egoic lotus is unfolding, can have enough prescience to begin knowing where we came from and knowing where we are going, even though we drink of the river of forgetfulness, you know, Lethe, on our way down into incarnation again? So it's a magnificent presentation of growth within the great Mahamaya, which is the universe. I always say, well, you know, why do I have to grow? I'm already absolute infinitude. And I know people think maybe I'm crazy for saying so, but I do believe that, you know, there is but one being, and it is, in a way, absolute and infinitely beyond absolute infinitude, and yet it is also in the pre- and post-universal state, absolute infinitude. And we are all of that. We are every possibility. In what state can we say? Is it a state of manifestation? Well, it's a state of which the absolute deity can be aware when it concentrates upon its own articulated nature, which contains all possibility. But, you know, my tendency is always to go off into philosophy here, but I'm also determined that unless this philosophy can really make a difference in how the living occurs within the Mahamaya of our everyday life, and really the Mahamaya of the universe, well, it doesn't do any good. So, you know, the idea of making the great thoughts practical is up to every one of us, and I think we can do that to an extent through the use of the abstract mind and the powers of the spiritual triad. It may be the intuition which reveals to us that which is, and the abstract mind works it out into thoughts which can be contemplated and which can be imparted to others and help along the way. How long have we continued to do this? Well, you know, that's the great puzzle, beginninglessly and endlessly. And have we ever reached this point at all? In a linear fashion, we would be hard-pressed to describe the manner of reaching any point along a linear continuum. But and yet here we are. Here we are forever, in a way, never having moved and always equidistant from beginninglessness and endlessness, if such an absurd kind of form of thought can be offered. Okay, friends, I've kind of stalled, haven't I? I've gone off into a little bit of philosophy before approaching the time of 1 hour. And we're almost there, trying to make it a 1 hour program, approximately, at least. So then we'll go on to, oh, look at that. I caught a mistake. Go on to number 36 and start the fifth rule. I just am more and more impressed at what Master DK has given us. The fullness of the light that he has given us only appears when the process of correlating all the many aspects of his gift is well underway. It's a little bit like a time bomb of light, you know, we start correlating and the light intensifies intensively, gradually, but a huge light has been bestowed, but unless we correlate under the planet Mercury, so much of that light will remain hidden. Okay, lots of love, see you soon, and on to number 36 when it becomes possible.